Offensive only to lazy men, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that won't take no for an answer. He keeps a hip flask of hydroxychloroquine handy just in case. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast again. I don't know about you people, but I'm very excited to be here with our slavishly devoted audience of Medicare aficionados. We are, when I say we, I'm including other people here, but we are bringing this podcast to you in support of the book Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022. And all of this is designed to help people understand and feel pretty good about crossing over from Obamacare to Medicare, whenever that may occur in your life. It doesn't have to be age 65. It can be later if you wish. If you're working and you're covered by your employer's plan, you don't really have to do much of anything until you decide to retire and leave your employer's plan. On the other hand, if your employer is a small employer, fewer than 20 employees, that's a whole different story. But that's what my book is all about. Go to Amazon and buy Medicare for the Lazy Man or buy Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, simplest and easiest guide ever. And you can get that in paperback. You can get it in hardcover if you love to spend money. You can also get it as a Kindle ebook, which is the least expensive option available. And you can get an audio book if they ever get their poop together and substitute the last year's book for the new one. And I've asked them to do that, and they say, oh, yeah, we're working on it right now. So you may go to that sales page on Amazon and find last year's audio book, but this year's audio book is available, and it'll be up for sale soon on that audio, on that page of books. So what do we do often with our opening after we listened to my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, who did a fantastic rendition of Elmer Fudd a couple of episodes ago? That's my favorite rendition. Randy has his own favorite having to do with my Fortress of Solitude in Cave Creek, Arizona. But Elmer Fudd, I think, is one of my all-time favorites. What we do then is we often play the 30-second radio spot that Randy and I put together, and it explains exactly how people should access our informational stream. And so I'm going to be quiet now so that somebody will play that, and then I'll come back and talk some more.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Okay, I'm back to talk some more. Isn't that wonderful? Most people at this point are starting to wonder what else they might be doing with their free time, but we try to make it entertaining and educational at the same time. When I say we, I'm talking also about my friend, my spiritual guru, and my podcast engineer, Randy Carson. Randy, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I see you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today.
You had mostly bushy-tailed.
Mostly bushy-tailed because I know you had some company in over the weekend. So, you know, it was a long, great chat, great visit. Got to go eat some good food, drink some good stuff, and have some good convo.
Well, we did. We COVID kind of slowed things down. The Democrat-induced panic over spreading diseases meant that a lot of people didn't travel for the last couple of years. And so we used to have a steady stream of Northern refugees that would come through, and we had a whole bunch of things we did with them. This is the first out-of-town visitors we've had for a long time. They're from Wisconsin. They checked the weather daily at their house, looked at their cameras and saw snow falling and ice being formed and everything else. And they were so happy to be here.
I'm not laughing at them. I'm not laughing at them. I'm laughing for them.
You're laughing with them because they were laughing up there.
Yes, I'm laughing with them because I, as you guys know on the podcast, I'm back from the Midwest myself.
Sure. They were laughing about the horrible weather conditions up north until the moment they stepped out of the car at the airport to fly back there. And then the reality set in. But we did a lot of fun stuff that they've never done because they'd never been to Arizona before. We put them in the car and hauled them up to Montezuma's Castle. And from there, we went just a hop, skip, and a jump to Sedona. And while in Sedona, we went out to Slide Rock State Park and saw the rock formations that the water has carved into, like a series of bathtubs, I guess you could call it. And it harkened back to a family reunion where Drew and his younger brother stripped down and did flips off of the cliff. And then they climbed back up and do it again. And they were doing all this in front of a bunch of Japanese tourists that were on the other side of the creek. And these Japanese tourists were mortified. And I had to.
Well, I bet they were.
I had to say, don't worry, they're Canadians. They're not Americans.
Yeah, they're not Americans. They're from up north, and we claim them, but they are just a little bit strange.
In fact, we had three SUVs full of Joneses on that trip. That was like 2013. Everybody came to town. And so driving up to Sedona, I took Drew and his brother and sister. They asked me a million questions. And when it came to talking about swimming in the creek at Oak Creek Canyon, I said, you're not going to want to do that because it's snow melt and it's really cold. This was probably Thanksgiving-ish. And I said, you will not want to get in that water. And they said, oh, yeah, watch us. And they were right.
For a Canadian, that might have been warm.
Absolutely right. And so anyway, we took our Wisconsin friends up to Sedona, stopped off at Tlocky Plocky, that artsy-fartsy shopping center that looks like it's old Spanish architecture, looks like it's really, really old. They've cut the parking down there, so we weren't able to find a place to park that wasn't in jeopardy of towing. And so I don't know what the heck. There's a way to solve that, but I haven't figured it out yet. But a lot of the parking is empty now, and it's restricted for some resort that borders Tlocky Plocky. But so then we said, well, heck, to heck with these people, let's go down to the next stop on our itinerary, which was Jerome. So we drove him down.
Sweet. Yeah, love me some Jerome.
Plus it was bike week. So there were a million bikes everywhere we went. Motorcycles, this is Harley Davidson's and other large machines. So we ate at a brand new restaurant in Jerome. When I say brand new, I'd never seen it before. It was a couple of years old. Very nice. And they've instituted pay parking. And there was a meter maid riding around on a little scooter.
What in Jerome?
I felt the same way. I marched right over to her while she was scribbling notes. And I asked her what was up and what are you making Jerome into a municipality for? And she said, oh, boy, here's what we're going to do with the revenue. We're going to build bathrooms. And it's going to be so much more convenient for people who, because all the stores say, unless you're a customer, you can't use our bathroom. And so this is going to, I hope, be an improvement. And she was so pleasant and not mean at all about the parking and stuff. And I said, what's it going to cost me if I accidentally forget to put money in the meter? Actually, it's not parking meters. It's like there's a machine at the end of a little lot. And you got to figure out how to work it. It takes like four college educated people to figure it out. And she said, well, theoretically, it's $25. But if you do it within the first 48 hours, it's $12 for a parking infraction. And she said, really, remember, the money's going for a good cause. I think you're going to be happy about it. So that's this now. And she's a great ambassador for Jerome to other tourists. But I'll bet you in 20 years from now, it's going to be they'll be fighting over who gets to keep the money and put it in their pocket, and it'll be corrupted just like all big city finances are.
There's going to be one new bathroom, it's basically a porta potty covered by brick down at the end of the street, and they'll still be collecting money.
Yeah, and I hope that Arizona doesn't turn into a blue state like California, because then they'll have to have six bathrooms, one for males, one for females, one for families, one for confused people, one for those who have recently switched over, and it's just going to be too expensive to maintain bathrooms.
And then the ones that don't know what the hell's going on.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So anyway, then we didn't have time to take them to Tucson. There's so much great stuff to see in Tucson, but we took them to all of the local places that we could think of to eat. So they ate about four meals a day. And one of our neighbors has bought land on top of one of the foothills of Black Mountain. And he got a machine up there, a big old backhoe, and he created a flat spot on this foothill. And eventually somebody issued a cease and desist order because there was a complaint from the dust marshal. There's apparently a dust official that is supposed to keep people from having to breathe dust. And this guy's pounding away on this mountain to create a building site. But it was fun. We had a cookout there, and it was well stocked with furniture, and we dragged a bunch of beer and wine up there. It is scary to get to. Mary is not very good with very high or cliffs, very high places. So this owner of the property had this this crappy old Blazer. Oh, no, it was a Suburban. And he drove people up in shifts. We parked farther down the cliff that he was going to build his house on. And it was pretty cool because he's been talking about this place, and this is our first time to see it. And his close-by neighbor he's gotten to be good friends with, his neighbor in Arizona that has a winter house here, very close to the place where we climbed up the cliff and had our cookout and wine and beer. His neighbor is my neighbor in Illinois. And so it's pretty weird. I know exactly where this guy lives, and I haven't met him face to face yet, but I'm looking forward to it because he's an oral surgeon, and by God, I could use an oral surgeon right about now. So anyway, that was what we did for the last probably week. And that's why many of my clients are in need of services, and I have not yet been able to handle them properly, but that's my goal, to get caught up again. What have you been up to?
I had kind of a busy weekend while you were off vacationing with your company.
Uh-huh.
I visited my granddaughter's school that she's fixing to attend kindergarten this fall. Fabulous school. I just think it's a great opportunity for kids. Horseshoe Trails Elementary.
Okay.
And it's one of the, I think it's probably the only school, if not one of the very few in Arizona, that has an equine program attached to a grade school.
And how old is she? About 15 or so?
No, she's just entering kindergarten, so she's five.
Now, that's a lot sooner than I would expect an equine program to be of interest.
Yeah, they don't do any, to my understanding, until you get a little older, you don't get on a horse, you care for the horse.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
It's called give him a shovel.
Oh boy, follow that horse around and pick up whatever he drops.
That's give him a shovel. That's the first thing you have to learn. And then the other thing is picking up hay and, you know, giving him a slice of hay here or there, a leaf of hay every once in a while.
Cool. It reminds me of my childhood in Wayne, Illinois, which is horsey, 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 but it's all English. And of course, I watch TV, so I wanted Western. But when I was a little kid, probably the same age, maybe a year older, my father bought a pony, and the pony's name was Snowball because it was all black except for a white blaze on its forehead.
Yeah.
And so Snowball was maybe, we found out, the meanest Shetland pony in the world.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah, oh, I know. I get it. Shetland ponies are just nasty.
Well, see, you know, we had just moved up from Oklahoma, and all these people saw my father coming because of the major Oklahoma accent. And so he had many practical jokes played on him until the people realized what a solid guy he was. But apparently Snowball had been owned by every family with kids in Wayne, Illinois, through the years, and had made himself obnoxious as a child's pet. And my stint with Snowball was no different. I mean, I wound up on the ground more often than not until I learned to hang on when he decided to try to buck me off. And but we were the last stop for Snowball. I guess he woke up dead one morning out in the pasture.
Oh, so his claim is there some sort of, you know, this is the type of Shetland pony that should have a monument erected somewhere around St. Charles. Is that true?
That's not true, because I don't think there was anybody that wanted to, that liked him well enough to want to memorialize him. So we basically had him hauled off to the glue factory. But Wayne, Illinois is also famous as the home of Marguerite Henry, who wrote a whole bunch of stories about horses and kids, like Misty of Chincoteague, who I believe was also a pony, but probably not a Shetland, some kind of Spanish galleon off the east coast of the U.S. Broke up in the, I don't know, 1600s, and a bunch of ponies escaped, and they were living wild on the islands off the coast. And now they make it a big deal to herd them from one island to another every year so that they can have, offspring. And so she wrote about adopting one of these ponies and bringing it to Wayne, Illinois, and living with it for a few years. And then she took it back and put it back in the herd and let her, procreate.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't know. They were popular books. When Justin Morgan had a horse, and Bridie of the Grand Canyon about a burro. So she wrote a whole bunch of those things. They were bestsellers, and she was our neighbor. But anyway, cool. Horsey. Hey, listen, I've got a stump the audio engineer or software designer or software engineer.
Okay.
What are you today, by the way? Which of these many hats are you wearing?
Oh, I would say today I'm probably more of a audio engineer. I'm not sure, but I think I'll claim audio engineer for today, because as you noticed in our last published podcast, I'm now beginning to bring in more of those extra sounds that we try to filter out as we're coming into the dock.
We had to listen. Actually, I had to listen by myself because Mary was busy entertaining our company. And so I missed whatever you put in the last podcast. What was it? Well, what did I miss?
We have to filter them out normally, but there's a lot of transport ship horn noise, coming in towards the latter part of the podcast. We always, as we're coming into the dock, normally on the yacht, we're clear out, way past the international date zone.
Right.
We're in international water. Then when you bring it in, we start hearing all the horns on the transport ships.
Okay. I did not hear that. I got to go back and listen. But I was the designated most severe critic. As many of the listeners may know, every podcast episode is graded by the most severe critic. And I got a D+ for that one because it was almost all you and I goofing off the whole episode. So
I suppose this one's going to be somewhat similar unless we get down to business.
Well, I did want to have this little contest to stump the audio engineer.
All right.
Just only one question, but I think you've got a fairly good chance. You've got a 1 in 50 chance of guessing the right answer. And I'm pretty sure you can do it. I have confidence in you. So here's the question. I'm licensed in all 50 states plus DC, and those licenses run for 1 or 2 years, depending on where you are. Generally 2 years. In Arizona, it's 4 years. It's beautiful. And so I got a notification. I had to renew my license in one state. So I went to the website that handles these things, and there's always a questionnaire about my criminal record. And so I answered, what's your current address? What's your current phone number? What's your criminal record? Have you been convicted of blah, blah, blah? Are you in arrears for child support? that'll be the day. And it goes on and on and on, that applies to all states. But then this particular state had some additional questions. One of the questions asked me what my race was, my ethnic history. And so I had a whole bunch to choose from: Hispanic, non-Hispanic, and a whole bunch of, am I Black and all that stuff. And I had to choose. And boy, it took me a while to find my proper selection in the list of options to choose from. And I thought, okay, I'm finished. And then, I clicked on the, proceed to the next step. And the next step was asking me my sexual orientation. And it was, I had many choices there. Ironically, I thought there'd
I know where this is going.
Well, my question to you is, which state do you think it was that added all of these requirements to their insurance license renewal requirements?
Well, based on your description of that, Doug, I'd have to say California.
Ding, 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 ding. You are correct, sir. I thought you might guess Vermont or some weird little state like
Vermont.
That.
I mean, they hardly recognize. I mean, they're the stand up citizens back there. There's only males and there's only females.
Vermont and California. Apparently, there's a lot more variety out there because I had to look down the list of options.
Was there a fill in the blank?
There might have been. Yes. If none of these apply, why don't you tell us what you are? The explanation they had was that it was for their outreach programs.
So
those poor bastards are paying $7 a gallon for gasoline, and the state is generating outreach programs for insurance agents, for Christ's sake. No wonder that is maybe one of the worst states in the world to live in, if you don't count New York and New Jersey.
Well, then, Illinois. As you know, you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier in the week. Then, because California is $7.40 gas, most people can't afford it. They're now starting some sort of a charity program, where they send you checks from the state, who has no money to begin with, who is charging the tax that you can't afford to pay your gas.
Well, the theory is that the state is eventually going to talk the Biden administration into reimbursing them for all the welfare that they're pouring out.
Sure. Yeah, you've seen those stickers that are showing up pretty
sure
commonly
have.
On gas pumps. Picture Joe Biden going, "I did that."
By the way, the governor of Illinois, who is coming up for re-election at the end of this year, we lovingly call him Pugsley. He has somehow coerced the Illinois legislature to enact a law in which a printed brochure with his photograph on it and the words, "I have temporarily suspended the Illinois gasoline tax," and that's supposed to be put in a prominent place in every gas station in the state of Illinois. And the way the law is written now, there's a daily $500 fine for any gas station that refuses to post it. And so I'm going to get my magic marker ready when I go back there, and I'm going to draw mustaches and goatees and maybe weird little Japanese glasses on Pugsley's face every place I can find it.
If you can, I mean, you've got a lot of connections back there in the old country. If you can come up with one of those that I could have.
Yep. I bet I could find one on the internet.
I would be forever beholden to you.
I'll be looking forward to blacking out one of his teeth. Oh boy. Well, let me get
I did that. I've suspended the tax. I did this. I did that. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's going to make a huge difference in oil prices. I'll tell you, suspending the tax. The tax is onerous, but how about that pipeline, Biden? How about reinstating that pipeline from Canada that was on the verge of making us completely independent?
Yeah. Instead we're releasing, we're releasing part of our reserves, which is a great idea any day.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic. So what are we going to do when the battleships need some petroleum? By the way, have you changed venues? I'm seeing not your normal office setting, but I'm seeing what looks like an old West town. Are you sitting out in the middle of a...
Well, I was really, really enjoying going around on our yacht, as you know. But I had to come in and see some dry ground for a while. So what you see behind me there is Tombstone, Arizona, one of the most famous locations that I know of in Arizona by name. And yes, we're looking straight down Main Street towards the OK Corral, which is all real. The reason I like Tombstone so much is because it's the real deal. It's not a movie set. It actually happened.
It is. Well, two things about that. First of all, I can see a whole bunch of people real far away. If that's where the OK Corral is, the gunfight is restaged, I believe that's Allen Street. in Tombstone. I've been there a few times, but I haven't memorized their layout like I should have. And secondly, I ran across a blurb yesterday in the Tucson Chamber newsletters. The Tucson Chamber of Commerce announced that Tucson, let's see, Old West Town. It was Old Tucson. It was built in 1939 as a movie studio for the movie Arizona. And then every TV show and Western movie that was filmed, half of them were filmed in Old Tucson up until the 1970s. One of the most recent, or one of the most consistent, was High Chaparral. That was filmed there. So you'd recognize every building in Old Tucson, but somebody has taken over Old Tucson and they're going to rebuild the whole thing and make it like a really good operative studio and tourist destination now. So
wow, that's cool, good news, because I had heard that Old Town Tucson was closed, but I figured some developer was going to turn it into something disgusting.
Nope, it's going to be something less disgusting. It's a company that has scenic railroad things, you know, like tourist things. I believe they might own the Verde Valley Railroad. And okay. I don't know if they own the one that goes up to the Grand Canyon from Williams, but I think they own that one in Colorado that's so famous. It's a narrow gate, Durango, the Durango and, oh, yeah, and some yeah, other. Yeah. So I'm hoping that they turn it back into the kind of fun place that Old Tucson used to be. So first time I went there, I was in eighth grade, and it just got better and better the whole time I was hanging around Tucson as a kid. And then I heard that it burned down maybe 20 years ago. And I thought, okay, that means they torched it to get the insurance money.
Yeah, burned down means the insurance company was going to pay right for it.
Okay, I got a couple of articles here. One is shorter than the other. We might have burned up a bunch of our time. What kind of time do we have left?
Well, we're kind of running short, but we'll make it happen.
I'm going to read the shorter article then, so that the audience is not trapped in their chairs for too long. This is... I think this is an interesting admission of the problems that some people have, especially my friend Roy. I don't even know if he still listens to my podcast episodes, but Roy had a procedure done that was considered to be experimental, except that the doctors have done it thousands of times, apparently. So it should not be experimental, but Medicare was not going to pay for it, even though it was extraordinarily effective in solving his pain problems. And so this is and Roy is in the process of appealing. So he had to pay $12,000 out of his own pocket. And we went through the process a couple of steps. When I say we, I was listening to the conversation he had with a judge, an administrative judge, who didn't seem to be all there. And so Roy managed to get a little bit of his money back after a conversation with this judge, but not the full cost of his surgery. And so he escalated his appeal up another levels. So the article of this, headline of this article is Medicare changes the rules after patient wins coverage battle through five appeals. And this was, this is not one of those old time smelly articles from 5 years ago that I often plague you with. This is from April 11th, just a few days ago, Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's got a television station, WBTV. I don't know what that is. So a guy named Shane Bear fought his insurance company through five appeals to get them to cover a drug he needs to treat life-threatening condition. But after that victory, Medicare made a switch, which put him back on the hook for thousands of dollars every month. Bear has tried fighting the decision at every turn and appealed to foundations named for his disease, but to no avail. WBTV, their investigation shows the tight network of companies, nonprofits, and financial interests that this guy has had to battle against. Long before he was diagnosed with a rare, devastating disease, he had faced a lifetime's worth of adversity. He was paralyzed from the waist down in a car crash. He said, "I was driving to work and a deer jumped in front of me. I swerved, hit an embankment, went off the other side, woke up in a helicopter." Not long before that, his young daughter died for an unknown reason. But this guy's a fighter. He threw himself into the gym and became a bench pressing machine. He even contemplated competing in the Paralympics. "It makes me feel normal. like I can do things not a lot of other people can do, Bayer said. Bayer was eventually given another diagnosis after he started feeling numbness in his hands and arms. He has CIDP, chronic inflammatory demethylating polyradiculous neuropathy, a rare, I guess it is rare, a rare autoimmune disorder that shuts down nerve endings, causes muscle weakness, and can eventually lead to paralysis. He said, I wouldn't be able to do anything. I wouldn't even be able to roll around in a wheelchair. So he started treating this this disease, CIDP, with a drug called Hizentra. And he said the symptoms started reversing almost instantaneously. Bayer has Medicare, which covered Hizentra when a nurse was administering it to him in the comfort of his own home. But the insurance rules meant it wasn't covered when the nurse left and he could start administering the drug himself at home. After five appeals, a judge finally ruled in his favor, saying that his sponsor would have to cover Hizentra on Part D prescription drug plan. He was paying almost nothing for the drug after a hardship waiver from the drug manufacturer. But just a few months later, he received a letter saying that Hizentra coverage would switch from Medicare Part D to Part B. Now, the way the Medicare system is set up around Hizentra is going to make it difficult for him to access the drug in his home, honestly. Let's see, the past board chair of the National Home Infusion Association, vice president at Vital Care Infusion Services, he's the guy that we're hearing from now. He says that the way Medicare system is set up is going to be tougher for Mr. Bayer to access the drug. So the NHIA, National Home Infusion Association, wrote a letter to CMS, and don't get me started on why they can't spell their acronym properly. The letter said that for people like Shane Bayer, who don't have supplemental insurance with Medicare, the switch from Part D to Part B could be a financial death sentence. The result of this shift will create significant hardship in that he has a very real potential to negatively impact access and adherence, especially for the 19% of Medicare beneficiaries without some type of supplemental coverage. I'm going to put that right on Shane. Shane should have been offered the opportunity and should have taken advantage of it to get Medicare supplement, even though he's not 65 yet. So he says his new out-of-pocket would be about $10,000 a month. He's looking into supplemental insurance, but says nothing that he could qualify for would move the needle on the price. It might as well be $10,000 a day because I don't know anybody that can afford that, he said. Hizentra is manufactured by CSL Behring, Behring, and in a press release, the company praised the switch to Part B, claiming it would increase patient access and decrease out-of-pocket costs. The GBS-CIDP Foundation International also supported the change, but the foundation's 990 forms, that must be some like a disclosure form, they show that the the drug company is a major contributor, giving more than $400,000 last year alone to the foundation, I guess. Makes you question why there is such a motivation by a certain group of stakeholders around, you know, things like living in Part B, Davis said. The switch to Part B is part of what's called a local coverage determination. CMS records do not show how LCDs are generated or what entities propose them, local coverage decision determination. And CMS did not answer those questions when asked by the reporter in question here. So they reached out to the drug company and to ask why the switch to Part B happened. And the drug company provided a statement saying that it would be cheaper for people on Part B of Medicare with supplemental coverage, but did not answer specific questions about how the decision impacts their finances. So for people like this Shane Bayer, the switch to Part B makes it far more expensive than it is for anyone on Part D. For him, it's impossible to afford, and he says he can feel the symptoms of his disease coming back. I was prepared for that, but man, I don't like it, he said, fighting back tears. It's scary. It's just frustrating. All righty. Well, that drug now is going to be considered a Part B or Medicare outpatient expense, which after a $233 annual premium, Medicare will pay 80% of all Part B expenses, and people that have a Medicare supplement will then have the other 20% covered by their supplement. This guy doesn't have a supplement, so I think what he's looking at is paying 20% of the cost of the Part B coverage of his drug, his infusion. Plus, I think he has to get it at a doctor's office. He can't get it at home anymore. I think that's what I'm getting. He was better off when it was a Part D prescription drug plan expense. So that's what we take away from this story, that somehow rules change for this particular drug only. And I think the article is saying that that change was precipitated by the drug company and promoted by the nonprofit organization that is devoted to patients and largely funded by that drug company. That's what I took away from that article. So I don't know, are there shenanigans going on here with this particular drug? You tell me, because I'm just not sure, but somebody's unhappy. And it might be that this change is going to be detrimental for some people and not for others. I don't know. What do you think, Randy?
You know, every time I hear one of those types of stories, it's really, I can empathize with people that get stuck in those types of slots. It's just a bad position to be in. But I don't know, since I'm no expert on the deal, I don't know what the right answer is. Well, but ultimately, those people that get stuck in, you know, between a rock and a hard spot, I empathize with them.
I was hoping that article was going to dwell more on the appeals process, which has many steps. It starts out with a couple of easy steps. Then it gets more and more complicated. Then you get these administrative law judges involved. And my friend Roy, who had that surgery and he had to pay for it out of his own pocket, is going through that process right now to get his money back. He also requires periodic, hugely expensive infusions. Now, his infusions are covered under Part B of Medicare, and his Medicare supplement picks up the difference between the 80% that Medicare pays and the 20% that he would have to pay. So he's in the position of this guy that the article was about, this Bayer guy, but he has a Medicare supplement sold to him by yours truly. And so he's kind of a happy camper. He says, I don't like having to go through this medical procedure. Every week he gets an infusion, but he said, I'm always happy that I don't have to pay much for it. So that's,
well, you know what the moral to that story is, Doug?
I don't know. What would it be?
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Talk to Doug Jones and get yourself a supplement. And that does not mean a Medicare Advantage plan, or as I like to call it, the Medicare Disadvantage Universe.
Ah, well, I think that's excellent advice. Excellent advice. So I imagine the old clock on the wall is telling us that we've got to leave Tombstone and go back.
We got to start heading back north to Cave Creek to what I... It just puts a smile on my face. Your fortress of solitude. I love that. But, you know, in the meantime, I have several things that I always do at the end of each episode to kind of close the loop. One is to keep sending mail to Doug at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. He enjoys it. He looks for it. And without it, it really makes for a boring day for him. And go out and buy yourself several copies of his new paperback, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022. Wait for the audio. I don't know, man. It seems to be a real chore getting that audio out, but it'll be worth it when it gets there. And the Kindle's already available. So as Doug is looking out over the horizon from his fortress of solitude, we are going to sign off now because we are out of fuel and we need to bring in the yacht. But in the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and now the guy who's looking, because of past problems, he's looking to hire a great harbor pilot.
I think I already have one. I think I have one in mind. Bye-bye, everyone.